Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
Well, greetings and welcome to this episode of Talk Straight on this Thursday evening, October 14th, 2021. And as you know, we announced this past Tuesday that the regular format of Talk Straight over the last 5 years now will be changing a bit. And we will be cutting back to one day. However, the good news is, and that's largely what our conversation will be about this evening, is that we have a resident co-host that's going to be joining us or be facilitating our dialogue on Thursday night. And he'll get a chance, you'll have a chance to hear from him and perhaps pose questions to him and things of that nature. Mr. Benjamin Shelton, Jr., no stranger, Talk Straight. He's been a guest on here a few times, as well as he facilitated the show a couple of months ago. Did a fabulous job. And more than likely, he'll be integrating some of his own social networks into Talk Straight. So you'll have a broader audience to share with those who've been following us normally. Let me apologize right now if you're trying to follow us in this group. I'm not sure exactly why, but my Facebook account is saying that it's not seeing my camera. Folk have been telling me they haven't been getting the announcements and so forth and so on, and they can't follow or see the show as if it's been hidden. I don't really know how to answer that. Sometimes it's working, sometimes it's not. However, let me apologize if you're following us, if you hear us later, or you're listening from the podcast platform. Not really sure how to deal with that or what to make of it, but I want to, again, apologize. Perhaps it'll get better. But nonetheless, tonight's purpose largely for the next about an hour or so is to engage Mr. Shelton. And hopefully he'll be able to share with us a little bit about his vision for Thursday evenings. I don't think it'll run the whole time that we ran 2 hours. Tuesday, we're still endeavoring to run for 2 hours on Tuesday nights each week. And on Thursday nights, he'll let you know when he is going to be airing and sending out announcements and things of that nature. So you'll be able to follow him and keep up with him that way. 657-383-0944. number you can call into the studio tonight. 657-383-0944. And largely don't have a formal topic tonight again as we didn't on Tuesday, but we're just going to speak in general. And Mr. Shelton is going to come in, and I believe he's here with us right now. Good evening, Mr. Shelton. How are you, sir? Mr. Shelton, can you hear me? Jump right on in when you can hear me, Mr. Shelton. Okay. I'm sure he'll be, I trust he'll be joining us here very shortly. Hear from him. Hey, there he is. That's family man. See, when you're a family, a working man and a family man, you kind of balance it all these things. You understand? How are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm doing well. I had myself muted. And I thought I pressed unmute. Apparently, I took it off speaker. So,
all right. Well, good. How are things going?
They're going well. Appreciate you having me on. Appreciate you having me as the heir to the Thursday night program.
Wait a minute. Now, I don't know about that. No, we're happy. Got great reviews from the last time you were on, and. People seem to have enjoyed that. Hopefully Mama D will be joining you and some others, you know. Some of your callers that you had to call in, great conversation. As you know, we're scaling back a little bit because I got my hands full and got quite a bit going on, right? And we just don't want to end the dialogue altogether. So I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, you're fine. I'm saying understandably.
Yeah. We've been blessed to have great conversation over the last 5 years, and heaven knows I don't want to throw that away. So, and we appreciate everyone who's followed us, who's participated and, you know, communicated with us and shared and posted out our conversations in the whole nine yards. So, but let me do this, Ms. Shelton. Let me yield the floor to you a little bit, if you don't mind, to I can't say introduce. We present to some and introduce to others. But for the sake of that one individual that may not know who you are, give us a little bit of your background. And then talk with a little bit about your experience on the last podcast you facilitated. And from there, what are some of the type of topics that you like to explore with the audience there? So let me be quiet and give you the floor.
Certainly. Well, first off, my name is Benjamin Shelton Jr. I am the son of Benjamin Sr. For any of the listeners who know who that is or who has kept up with kind of just some of the family and friends that has participated in the show. I'm also a man of that wears many hats at times, just like I think a lot of humans. You know, we have to be multi-versed or multifaceted, or just have the ability to keep up. So, you know, I'm an entrepreneur, so I own a small business. I own some real estate. My own. Those are the two things, major things that I own. But I also am an insurance agent. Licensed insurance agent that does property, casualty, life, and health, and some commercial. I'm also involved in some ministry work as well. So we have a bit of that. I'm an enthusiast of sports of many kinds. So oftentimes, you know, I'll have some passionate conversations and debates along that. I like, once again, just a multifaceted person, but what I'm passionate mostly about, and I believe this radio talk show has done a great job at, is providing ideas and solutions for things that could help our communities and that can help us, move forward as a people, as an entire group. I don't want to say as a nation. Yes, it's going to start at home, but thinking of things from a global perspective.
Right.
I often think of things from a very local perspective, and that's good. You have to you have to look at things on a local perspective, but you can limit your ideas if you're only looking from a local setting. So you can grab inspiration from just about anywhere. So if we can find just different ways, different inspirations from all across the world that can help us as a group of people, as a nation, as a global world, because that's what we've pretty much evolved into due to globalization, I think it's a conversation where we can all be able to take the nose so we can help each other out in this thing that we call life.
Wow. Okay. Well, I appreciate that. So let's just shoot from the cuff here, man. Let's shoot from the cuff. You're a young man in America today, and you've no doubt heard many make the battle cry that things ought to be better. They got to get better. Somebody got to make them better. That being said, what are some of the topics that you look forward to engaging your listening audience in this present moment?
Certainly. So, definitely we'll be talking about some things in entrepreneurship. I feel that is vital when it comes to forms of liberty. Definitely we'll be talking about things as that pertains to even potentially, not necessarily relationship, but just family and relationships also go hand in hand with family. So things as families that we can do, we can practice, and we can work on. We'll definitely be having some conversations about potential community efforts that we in the future may be looking to partner with different people locally to just find out what kind of events we can help with and volunteer with and finding ways to get involved. So those are some things we are very passionate about in conversation, and also just some inspiring topics as well. You know, as like you mentioned, I got the opportunity to host a couple weeks back, and and the topics that we had, you know, they were about how to overcoming and times that we overcame. And it was a little broad of a conversation, but the point was just to spark up ideas of, as a community, you know, things that can be done. So maybe having some of those as well in between to keep the morale high, to keep us all moving in the right direction.
Okay. Yeah, I had a chance to listen to those shows, and they were very impactful. You know, some people would argue, Mr. Sheldon, that we don't need nobody to do a bunch of talk, but we need action. And while there's an element of truth to that, if we're not communicating with one another, is there any way we're going to be able to walk in agreement with one another?
I don't believe so. Just like you said, if everybody is trying to do action and everybody is attempting to do their own thing, then you don't have concerted efforts, you don't have combined efforts to be able to get to the whatever goals that you're trying to reach. So while I'm very much so pro people doing what's best for them, but at the same time, although you're doing what's best for you, we live in a world with other people, and it is impossible to do what's best for you without interacting and engaging with other people. So we have to have some kind of communication, some kind of baseline understanding with each other, to see how you operate and how I can operate. I don't have to tell you everything, but we have to have some kind of understanding and some mutual ground that we can operate with together that allows us to have healthy processes that we all use for our own lives.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about what you said earlier in reference to family, and it reminded me of some time ago. That was a movie out about these penguins, right? It was called Happy Feet, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And it struck me as being very interesting when you think about the phylum, that species, how it's the male penguin that when the mother gives birth to the young or lays the egg, is the male penguin that sits with the egg throughout the brutal winter in the Arctic. And storm and rain, the mother then goes and finds food to bring back to the father penguin and the young penguin, if they survive. But what I find interesting is that somehow within that little culture, the father understands that if someone has to make a sacrifice to protect and keep the young egg to a point to it grows, it's going to be the father. What do you think about that? I said, wow, that's an interesting thing about the dichotomy of that the penguin life there. What's your thought on that?
Forgive me. Occasionally, I may have to take a quick sidestep to take a bite. Occasionally, working in this family thing once again. I think it's very powerful. You know, animals have figured out what works. They are intelligent creatures, but they're also simple. You know, over time you have to adjust, and they figure out, hey, somebody has to protect, somebody has to provide, somebody has to feed, somebody has to, you know, go out and do certain actions, and it's worked for them. I think we all can learn something from animals if we observe and just realize that our roles can be simpler than what we have made them out to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
You see that we recognize as a result of our conditioning, our social conditioning, and those are real issues and real things. But if we could find a way to make things simpler for ourselves and not more complicated for ourselves, I think that we could find that. So that's a very, like you said, an interesting dichotomy.
Yeah, I thought so. I thought, you know, one of the things that seems to be very, very needed, when you look at various areas, we've been focusing on urban America, right, and its plight, particularly as faced by young men and families in troubled neighborhoods, right, and we start searching for answers, for solutions. And I can't help but think that the real answer is to go back to revitalizing the nuclear family. Because correct me if I'm wrong, while it's true that in African cultures the village was united, it does not take a village to raise a child. It takes the parents of the child to raise it. Help me with that. Maybe I'm off. I mean, because somehow we've justified now by the concept of a village in this Western perspective, allowing everybody and their mama to be all in your family business, and everybody going crazy. Ain't nobody getting nothing. I hope I'm making sense to you. I hope I'm making sense to you. But what do you think about that, the need to focus on the nuclear family and empower men to be heads of households and women to work with them, and to have no more two but one? That's what the Savior said. See, what he's put together, let no man pull us under. I didn't come to preach, but you understand what I'm saying. Talk to me about that.
About it not taking a village to raise a child, but a family, a dynamic family to raise a child. Not
right.
A dynamic family. Yes. Well, let me take this and let just to say simply, I am of the mindset that to an extent it is important for the decision makers in your children and family's life to primarily be the mother and the father. Anybody
okay.
else as a decision maker for your family, I do not personally agree with that that structure or that setup. You know, it's very interesting that you mentioned that. Yesterday, I received an Amber Alert on my phone, and
okay.
I don't recall or remember exactly who it was I saw on the Amber Alert, but I also went onto my news feed on my phone, and I saw that. I want you to pay attention to specifically how I'm phrasing this.
Okay.
That was a mother who did not have custody of their child.
Mm-hmm.
An abduction of a child from a non-custodial
I'm sorry. You there? Okay, it looks like he. While he gets reconnect with us, we are joined by St. Louis. St. Louis, Mr. Shelton is on with us tonight, and he's going to be facilitating Thursday night discussions moving forward, starting next week. And so he's been. We've been listening to him, and we've been talking about some of the things that he foresees entertaining the listening audience with here. Come on back in when you get there, Mr. Shelton. But welcome, St. Louis, to tonight's discussion.
What are you going to be talking about? Hope it ain't slavery.
Well, he was just on, and actually, Mr. Shelton, you back with us?
Yes, I'm here. I'm sorry. I was saying to hold on for 1 second, but I'm back. I had to do something really briefly there. I was saying, you know, we're in the middle of the conversation. We had the question on the floor was about a village raising a child rather than the parents raising the child, and I just the thought came across my mind. What came to mind is I received an Amber Alert yesterday, and I didn't see who the Amber Alert was, but I read another news article that discussed an Amber Alert. And when I read the news article, it said that a non-custodial mother abducted her child. And thinking about that phrase, now I'm not saying whether I'm for or against parents having custody, but I'm stepping outside of what I read and putting on an objective perspective of what I was reading. When I looked at it, I saw that a mother who birthed a child is being listed or framed as a person who is kidnapping her own child. And I thought to myself, wow, what a profound thought. What a profound thought. So when you're talking about, and I'm not, once again, I don't know that person's situation, and there are reasons why people are non-custodial parents. So I'm not dismissing that idea and that philosophy. People who are on hard times are physically dealing with demons such as drugs and things of that nature. So I'm not saying that every parent, that's not the conversation. But the point that I wanted to make is society can have an influence of how we're viewed as parents dealing with our it has an influence on how we are viewed as parents operating and living and interacting with our children. And that is a powerful thought, that even when you are a biological parent, there's somebody who's going to have a say about you and your family. So I am of the mindset that it is important for the biological parents to do everything in their power to raise a child with the final say. Now, as far as influence goes, we can't control people attempting to influence us. But what we can do is we can make the best decisions for our families based off of the resources and the information that we have. So I think it is important for us as parents to make the best informed decisions for our children without outside dictation of what should be done or what should be done for our children.
Okay. We're joined by St. Louis. When you stepped away, St. Louis joined into the conversation, and I mentioned to him that you're going to be facilitating discussions on Thursday night. He posed a question. He said, what is he going to be talking about? St. Louis, did you hear a little bit of where he was? That may not be the only thing, but we were just speaking in general about some of the topics, and one of them was family, the importance of parents rearing children and the nuclear family. Would you like to respond to that, St. Louis?
Well, we talked about that the other day, didn't we?
To some extent, yes. To some extent, we did. Yes, we did. And Mr. Shelton will be expounding on that, perhaps, let him and others. I'll give him an opportunity to kind of talk about some of the other ideas that he wants. But yes, that's largely what.
Well, when a child is born in the United States, it's a United States citizen.
Right.
And it has to be afforded due process. And it has to have its innocence of a child protected.
Okay. Okay.
If an agency decides that the parent is harming the child in an uncomely fashion, then the agency has to make adjustments for the benefit of the child.
I see what you're saying. Okay. So, okay, St. Louis, that's an interesting point because, you know, there are different cultures here, and those cultures have different perspectives on discipline and rearing children and what values should be taught and what things they should be protected from, influences. And some might argue that, hey, you're depriving the child of the American experience or the American dream if they don't get out there like everybody else. Is that what you mean, or are you talking about in terms of their mere safety, their physical, emotional safety, when you talk about protecting them?
Well, it's physical and well health, welfare,
mm-hmm.
and being.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The child is fed.
Right.
The child is not harmed. All those things.
Okay.
Certainly.
Okay.
Yeah, certainly. Just like St. Louis said, those are the major factors that play into, like you said, a child's relationship or continued relationship with their parent or with their guardian is all of those criterions are met. And that's very important for a child's development. You know, for sure. And certainly part of the discussion that when you mentioned that I spoke about family, it's going to be very important, particularly for everybody who's listening. I hope to engage a large audience in the future or in the near future, or just whenever, or even the small audience that we may have, that's fine as well. For those who are raising children or for those who are currently living in today's times with children and things of that nature, just some different kinds of ideas that we can have and that we can discuss that will help with the child's well-being from a physical perspective, from a psychological perspective, and all different things like that, that'll be useful for parents. Because, you know, sometimes you just don't know. And when you don't know, it can cause, cause you to be in some levels of pain if you don't have understanding of what can be done.
Sure. So as a young father, you have three beautiful children, and you and your wife are working to rear. And I think you would agree that it's going to be a little while before they're adults and before they will have to apply what you taught them, you know, independently. But what's your view of some of the challenges that a father or a mother who's trying to instill values of education, good wholesome social moral fiber, hard work ethics, things of that nature. What do you see some of the challenges are there?
Well, I judging off of experience and judging off of personal childhood experiences, I think the biggest barrier for parents with children is their ability to have time with the children. Oftentimes, we are ripping and running, trying to make things happen. And in the process of ripping, trying to keep the roof overhead and house, you know, and bellies fed and warm, warm houses is our ability to be present. Both parents are. And particularly in this society where the reason why I mentioned those topics is because all of those things are going to play a factor into it holistically. It's interesting because I find myself a lot of times, and I say this a lot of times, that it depends. It's case by case. So I like to analyze that case. But at the same time, you still also have to add the holistic factor. You can't make everything too narrow. You do have to broaden your lens
you know, even when we're addressing issues on a broad perspective as well, so that it can all be worked at. So that's just interesting, trying to figure out the balance. But let's go back to the point. Going back to the point, parents having the time to be able to spend with their child, to have enough influence so that the children actually know what their parents are like and know what they, you know, what kind of values, you know, the parents have for the children. You know, if we are able to, as a young parent, have the appropriate time to provide that influence, I believe we'll be more successful raising our children in the manner that we see fit. Otherwise, you're leaving whoever else, you're leaving your children in the hands of whoever else is available or whatever else is available, such as obviously the schools, entertainment, television, the neighborhood that you're
right.
restricted to, you know, all of those different
right.
things. So time, I believe, time with your children is an important factor when it comes to
sure.
being able to produce the kind of family that you're looking for and the kind of outcomes that you're looking for being parents.
Well, gentlemen, I've often said that the influence and the examples that we portray before our children makes them like little tape recorders. They record, and over time, and at some point, they play back what they've learned, what they've seen, what they've observed. I never will forget, I was teaching high school, and young lady came in, and she was a little foul, you know. And, you know, I said, listen, come here, man. You're an attractive young lady, and you don't need to be talking like that. All she gave me, she told me about myself. So I said, well, I'm going to have to call your mother and have her to come up and do a parent-teacher conference with me and address your behavior. Call her. Sure enough, I did. And, of course, at this point, it gotten to a point where we had to send her to the office because she was very, very disruptive. And make a long story short, in an odd way, gentlemen, I saw where she got all of that from. She got it from her mother, okay? But the strange thing about it is, even though this lady was like in her 30s or so, it was interesting that when you listened to her, it was clear to me that I was listening to a teenager herself, right? And all of the fear, the apprehensions, the frustration that the daughter were expressing, the mama was sharing the same things in her own way. And I said, wow, I can understand now why the little young lady, 14, 15 years old, found herself feeling like she had to be take a defensive pose to everything and everybody, and her mouth was her greatest weapon at the time. But that was reflective in Mama, too. And it took a minute to be able to listen to Mama, give Mama an opportunity to talk, right, and to put it out there for her to calm down and realize there is no reason for you to be so guarded and on edge. Very interesting dynamics, though. We weren't able to fix all of that, but at least we were able to have a little bit better communication. Young lady came on the class, and she was, you know, she was still disruptive in her own way, but at least she respected the fact that, hey, you're going to have to, you know, you can't just take over the whole class. But, yeah, so that's kind of where it is with parents. And I think what you were saying that or St. Louis, rather, was talking about how instances where a court, a family court or a juvenile court, remands the right of a parent. And that's where that comes from, this idea of a – you see it often with fathers, with dads. They say they're abducting their children, and they're the biological parent, the parent. It seems a little odd, but there are reasons why, again, to keep children safe, there are laws in our society that are designed to do that when even their progenitors are a threat or a danger to them in the cases of abuse and neglect. And I hear people say all the time, the law won't let us discipline our children. Well, that's simply not true. The law prohibits you abusing or neglecting your children, but not disciplining them. Maybe St. Louis, there's some conflation there with discipline and abuse. What do you think?
Well, if you don't have family, no telling what discipline would end up looking like. Discipline is learned. It's a learned procedure. Something that's usually passed down.
I see.
People go to the doctor. If people go to reading books or picking up information from other people, they don't tell them what happened. Then it gets back to the old and everybody just ain't going to make it. They just, that's the way it is.
You know, unfortunately, everybody don't want to make it. How do you choose, though, when you at least stop providing the opportunity for them, a platform for them to make it, to help themselves? Do you understand my question, St. Louis?
No, what did you say? Say it again.
You were saying correctly that everybody is not going to make it, quote unquote. To some degree, I concede to that, largely because everybody don't want to make it, and certainly not in the way that others may want them to, right? And they got a right to do their own thing. However, how do, is there a point where we decide that we cut off even trying to inform people, assist them to make it, even if they don't know how
well
to
it's, well, personal choice may have some effect, but it's also personal ability. Some people just can't do what it is that they're trying to do. They're going to have to either do something else, either more complicated or less complicated.
Okay. All right. Well, sometimes society tells us that, and that we're going back to tracking now, the system they use in education, where you start telling certain individuals you can't be a scientist, you can't be a doctor, you can't be a lawyer, or you can only work in a factory or a fast food industry, and that's based on your skill level or your educational attainment level, right? And I'm not sure that that's a fair classification, because with the right encouragement, the right support and guidance, they may find, and quite often it's the case, man, I could have done a whole lot better if I'd have known better, if somebody would have took time with me, showed me. So, Ms. Sheldon, what do you think about that? That, in general now, yes, you can't expect, you can't force everybody to be the same. We're different individuals, you know, naturally so. However, there are some common things that we share in our social environment. And if we all are respectful to that, right, we can get along a little bit better. What do you think about that, Ms. Sheldon, in terms of some people ain't going to make it? Some people's ability prevent them from making it, if you will.
I believe it's important for us on our part, because like you said, the reality that everybody isn't going to make it, that's not up to us. That's up to God. who's going to make it, if everybody's going to make it, you know, that kind of whole ordeal. There's nothing we can do about that. But the things that we can do is we can do our best to be able to put the appropriate help in the airways for those who are going to make it, and for those who are going to be able, going to reach their hand out and do what they need to do. Because just like you said, I mean, I can't tell you how much information I've come across in my life that I have not acted on, that if I would have acted on, you know, it would have put me in a better position. I'm sure we all feel that way about a lot of things. But the reality is those opportunities are gone now. And, I mean, but there are always more opportunities that are around. I mean, there's never an end for opportunities. It's just a matter of you knowing where they are and or seeking out for them. Those who seek out for them, they will do better. Typically, that's how it works. But as far as us being able to put it out there for those who may not have known or who was not even seeking, but they just so happen to come across us or in passing or heard our whole right. conversation we were saying in passing. So it's important for us to put ourselves out there to provide all the help that we can, all the information that we can, all the resources that we can, wherever we can, you know, as much as we're able to, you know, never, I would say you never put yourself out. But at the same time, you know, wherever and whenever you're able to do it, you know, because it just may change, you know, it may catapult and think the dominoes may line up and it may change your community. It may change your outcome. It may change your personal life. So it's important for us to know
every opportunity possible. I certainly would agree with that. Someone always needs to be willing to offer, you know, and to be available to share. Now, that don't mean everybody's going to take advantage of y'all, or they're going, you know what I mean, they're going to appreciate it even. But, you know, that I say all the time, often I hear people say, man, you did all that nuts. Well, no, you didn't do it for nothing. You did it out of care and concern. Even though it didn't come out the way you wanted it to, it wasn't for nothing, right? It was for a good reason. It was for a good cause, but it didn't come out like you wanted it. Now, you can evaluate the next time. Am I going to allocate the same amount of resources, same amount of time? Am I going to deal with the same individual, right? But that, you know, it's not for nothing. Not for nothing, even if it doesn't come out like you want it, so... But very interesting. 657-383-0944. That's the number. Listen, Talk Straight. And tonight I will be facilitating our discussion on Tuesday night from 7 to 9. And Mr. Ben Shelton, who will be our resident co-host, will be in on Thursday night. Tell us a little bit about the time frame that you'd like to operate from, and will it be every Thursday, every other Thursday, or how do you intend to frame that?
Sure. So the time frame we're looking at is 7:30 p.m. Central Time. And as for now, I know I'm able to provide at least every other Thursday at this very moment.
Okay.
So that's
okay.
Something that we're looking to do is every other Thursday at the moment. We have the proper amount of topics, time, and interest, we'll be able to move it to every Thursday.
Okay. So I noticed when you facilitated a couple of weeks ago or last month or so, you have quite a huge response and following on those two nights. Have you communicated with some of those people? I know you have your own social network and what have you.
I've definitely talked to some of those people in person. I have not necessarily announced anything per se to my social media audience or just friends.
Okay.
Definitely have communicated with some of the people who are on the call and told them that was a potential thing to do that we may be looking to do for the future. When I officially spread the word, I'm positive we'll have a decent amount of intrigue from just the people I have spoke with to have conversation.
Okay. Yeah, I know that over the years, Talk Straight has evolved, and I'm appreciative of St. Louis' participation over the years, over time. And we've tried to make sure that, you know, the platform was there. There was a floor open for individuals to share their ideas, right? And I've often said, I don't expect people to agree with me. Believe it or not, I learned from the conversation. I really have. I made it a habit to go back and listen to, if not all of the show, a good portion of it, and it helped me to reflect, you know what I mean, St. Louis, and to stay focused on understanding the heartbeat or the interest of the listening audience there outside of my direct engagement. And again, I want to publicly extend my appreciation to you individually for the conversation. Yeah, we were beating up on St. Louis the other night, Michelle, and I was saying to him that it's not so much what he says, but how he says it that feels like a bomb being dropped on people sometimes. And you know, it stirs. But we've had some passionate dialogues. At the end of the day, when you examine what he says, you can find that there's element of truth to it, you know. But we appreciate that. And, of course, he's a man who's I won't tell his own story. He's right here. He can tell his own story. But I'm just saying that he's a man who's lived life and has a perspective, at least, to offer to our dialogue. Say, Lord, let me shut up and quit talking about you, man, and let you talk for yourself.
Yeah, people that don't like what they hear, they're in the wrong room. They need to go to the room with the kids.
Go there to the baby table. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, in general. In general, yes.
Go ahead, I'm sorry. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, in general, yes.
Okay, I was going to say, you know this to be so, and I think Ms. Sheldon as well, that if you got a group of people, you're going to have a mix of influences, right? Even levels of maturity. And that's no disrespect to anybody. And the balancing act is to engage all those people in a way that everybody respected and maintained and get something out of their being together, their fellowship, their interaction. So that's always a tough thing. Never an easy task there. So, but okay. Look, Sheldon.
Yes, sir.
It's almost an hour, and I promise not to hold you long because I know you were out with your family and you missed yourself to come on and kind of share with us a little bit here. So, if you will, relative to education, I know you and your wife, and I'm sure you'll talk about this more, you and your wife have committed yourselves to encouraging families, and I think you're part of a group, you're a member of a group that works with families a little bit.
Yes.
Okay, talk to us a little bit about that in relationship to some of the things that you think are important, particularly for young families. Now, my old behind, I ain't going to be able to turn the clock around. Anything I done messed up now, it's just going to be messed up, right? And I should get out of the way for young folks so they don't fall in my trap. So talk to me a little bit about that group that you're with and how does that how would that inform your focus there relative to support for families and raising children or what have you?
Sure. So the organization, I'm glad you mentioned it, because I almost forgot. Like I said, I wear so many hats, forgot how much stuff I participate in. But the name of the group is called Nurture the Next. It's a Tennessee-based nonprofit that focuses and aims on preventing neglect and preventing abuse and preventing all of those different things that we mentioned and we discussed. And it's not necessarily the program is not aimed to take children from their families, but it's aimed to be able to provide families who don't have the resources or whereabouts or know-how even that don't have, you know, that are new to raising children or just struggling in general, provide them with some sources and some outcomes and a little bit of education or just about children and child development and things of that nature. It's very powerful. Actually, when my wife was first pregnant with my child and she told me about this program, I was very skeptical, just based off of what I've known about American history, and specifically, what came to my mind is the welfare, I would say, diaspora of Black American fathers when it came to social programs. So, completely skeptical, to be honest, when I first heard about this program coming to the house to give some insight and input. But after opening up and having conversations and sitting down and really just getting to know the people and getting to know the organization, they've made me completely comfortable. We've done all kinds of things for the I was able to speak down on Capitol Hill, speak in the chamber where they during balancing the budget and figuring things out like that. So, I mean, it's been quite the experience. But mostly specifically, what they're able to do is, like I said, is provide some educational resources to new moms and new families. And it's not because it's not just moms, it's parents in general. So I'm on the volunteer staff, and we have, calls and things of that nature that we do as well. But, yeah, it's a lot of great things there's a lot of great resources that comes from that. I'll definitely be gathering some of those, and on those nights when I'm speaking about family, I'll make sure to bring that to the table and bring that to light, what can be done specifically here, and then maybe just even finding out if there's other programs like that from across the country.
Well, now, let me stop you right there, and Fendors, feel free to jump in here. But now, so how much focus are you putting on getting daddy right, bringing fathers back in the equation? I'm just curious.
So it's not an advocacy program per se. You know, I know there's a lot of lawyers and there's a lot of different things like that that focus on that, but it's not necessarily an advocacy program. But all what it typically is just for parents in general, both mother and fathers, whoever's the guardian or custodian of the child, just giving them information on how they can just insight on about children, toddlers, babies, and just some kind of resources like maybe. Like if you need a bill paid or something like that, linking them up with companies, or not necessarily companies, but other organizations that are able to do some of those things as well. But that's a good point. That's a good question. I'm actually curious now, are there any father advocacy programs here in Tennessee? I'm not aware of any, but it's not tailored specifically for that.
Well, now here's the thing. It's interesting you say that. There are, and back in 1999, actually, I opened the Fatherhood Home, and that was its primary focus. Prior to that, I worked with a national group called the Institute for Responsible Fatherhood. But it's interesting to say that because there's a young man, a gentleman here now, who has been pushing fatherhood initiatives, but it gets drowned out. It gets drowned out. At one point, there was only maybe one or two groups focusing on advocacy for fathers and over 23 groups that focused on women, empowering women. And it gets drowned out. So
yes.
Some people think that, no, they had their chance. And now it's time for women to stand out and have, you know, that's where the resource should be to support them. Well, in the end, if young boys and young girls don't have their fathers and those individuals that help give birth to them are not being responsible fathers, don't that add to the social ill of society? I'm curious to hear from you guys about that.
Certainly. Absolutely. I mean, I'm a father myself, so obviously I'm going to I shouldn't say obviously. But at being a father and being a father who's in the house with their children, I see how important it is to have, one, just from a human element, two people to be able to watch after, look after, tend to children, because they are a handful. If you have children, you know that. They are a handful.
Okay.
So, you know, occasionally just for somebody to tag you out, like right now, technically I got my wife working overtime because when I get home, you know, I'm doing a lot with the children, so she's working overtime at this moment.
Okay.
But it's very important to have somebody who's physically in the house there to help you. Now, as far as the biological father, it's extremely important to have, from a physiological standpoint, having your biological father, knowing that the person who birthed you cares about you and willing to put in the effort and the energy, although you may not be able to see them as often or as frequent as you like. But, yes, that's extremely important for the biological father to be present as much as they're able to possibly be, in their capacity, things of that nature. Once again, now it can get detailed. It can get specific depending on people's family situation. And I don't have all the answers to that, but I do know that overall I'm definitely an advocate for biological fathers being active in their children's lives, and there should definitely be I believe, is opportunity for that to happen if we put the effort, put the boots back to ground to be able to move in that directive again.
Okay. Yeah. You know, again, I hate that this very, very important conversation very quickly and easily becomes political. Right. when you simply start talking about somebody who, you know, became a progenitor and assisted in the production of human life, learning how to be responsible. Now, the reality is you don't have to have a PhD. You don't have to be a scholar at all. You don't have to have no money to get somebody pregnant. But that's one of the most important responsibilities in society, is to be responsible as a father. What about that, St. Louis?
Well, the vast majority of these biological fathers don't know nothing about raising no kid, no son.
Okay, why you say that?
Well, it's quite evident.
Can you expound on it a little bit for us? What do you mean exactly?
Well, you don't have a family. You got to have a complete family, which includes grandparents. It's the grandfather that raised that boy. The biological father was just a boy last month. How's he going to know how to raise it? Especially if he's coming from a dysfunctional situation.
I see. So what I'm hearing you say is there is a benefit to having generational development that supports the present generation of fatherhood. Is that right? Am I?
You have to. That's the way it was designed to do. You have children that grows up to be mother and father, and their mother and father goes on to become grandfathers and grandmothers. That's who raised them children until a certain age.
Interesting.
In the function of societies around the world.
Interesting. So now I'm just curious, you, your father yourself, when you and your wife, were you fairly young when you started your family? And did you rely heavily on your grandparents?
I was 26 or 27 when I had my first child.
Oh, okay. And did you feel like you had all the answers, or did you rely on your dad and your grandparents or whom, people like that to, or how
they
was
let
for you?
They will let you know. The women, the mothers let you know if that boy is a man. Not a male, a man.
What?
At least they're supposed to.
Talk to me about that. Man, that's intriguing. You said the mother will let you know if he's a man? How does she know?
The women will let you know. The mother comes from a functional family where she's seen a father and a mother interacts. She would know what to look for.
Same thing with
a husband. You don't let your daughter go out and marry anybody.
Okay.
And somebody that wants to marry your daughter don't approach her. They approach her brothers
or
the father or the uncle. They don't approach her.
I see. Okay. That sounds consistent with African cultures, Eastern traditions, for sure, from what you're describing there. But
yeah,
I don't know
nobody come up. Nobody approached my daughter for marriage. And upon doing background checks on at the family, and that wasn't what you would call a functional family, I said, nope, not this one.
I see. Well, now, I have a daughter myself, of course, and I agree with you, St. Louis, that there are some huge expectations I have. But now my daughter's an adult now. And I realized that
Did you raise her? If you taught her right, then she would carry that on into adulthood.
Okay. I was just going to say that my view has always been to kind of like, I use this analogy for both she and her brother, filling their backpack for life, right?
Mm.
So by example, largely, we place the teachings, the examples, the experiences, the knowledge that they needed to use and apply for themselves when they became adults. Now, will they use everything in their backpack? Will they use it the way we, exactly like they were taught? We don't know, Ben. But at the end of the day, I can sleep easy knowing that it's in there. And if they ever come back to me and say, I need to check your backpack, where your backpack?
Well,
that'd be my first question, St. Louis. Where your backpack? Go ahead.
That's a good analogy. But the present circumstances, I'm talking about the black community. I'm sure it goes on to others, too, amongst other ethnic
groups. But we're talking about the black community now. Let's be
specific. How these boys are becoming of the age of man, or should I say grown male, they're not men.
Interesting.
I raised my grandson, and my grandson is 23. He's not a man. He's getting close. When he leaves the house, he tells me that he's going, what time I can expect him back. That's because of the respect that you instill into a child.
Sure. Well, what do you call him, St. Louis? What would you call him if he's not a man?
Oh, he's a young man, but he's not a man. You know, he never had no pistol training, gun training, you know, all those things that a man needs to be able to do.
Interesting.
That's just one of the things. That's one of a host of things that they should know how to, what to do.
I'm listening to you. Okay. Well, that's interesting. Ben, what do you think about that? You think you've got to have... Not that St. Louis is not entitled to his understanding of things, but do you think how important do you think it is to be equipped with learning how to build a house and protect a house with a pistol? I read where a football player recently, NFL player I believe it was, the details are a little sketchy. He was his home was being burglarized and he was killed in the process. Have y'all heard about that?
No, I haven't heard about that one yet.
I saw it was an entertainer. He's a rapper, comedian, so to speak. His home got, during the home invasion, they shot his fiancée. When he was away,
wow.
She was at home. She had a firearm, and she was able to fend them off, but she got hit in the mouth. But she's in the hospital, and she's survival. So she's going to make a recovery.
Okay, I'm glad to hear that. Wow. Okay. Yeah, but so what do you thought about that? What do you think about that?
About having the ability to, you know, meet certain criteria.
Fullness of manhood requires you to be trained and these type of things.
I certainly believe there's an element of training. There's a level of information. There's a level of practicality that a male has to go through in order to be a man. Hold on. That a male has to go through in order to be considered a man. I often asked my sister when she was 18, I'm grown. I said, you ain't grown. 18, do that mean? And you cut that out. And I would often say, be able to pay certain XYZ bill, I would always tell you that's what you're grown. You know, if you're not paying XYZ bill, I don't care how old you are, you're not grown. You know, so I would be hypocritical to say the least that I don't have a criterion for what I consider somebody to be an adult. And in the same way that to be a man, I believe there are certain things that, like St. Louis said, that I don't have necessarily a blueprint for, but I there are quite a few things I believe are necessary for us to be productive men in societies, for sure.
Now, gentlemen, I'm going to let you go, Ben. Appreciate you joining us here. I see the babies done come, and they done got the best of mama now. They coming to get you. but we appreciate that. And I was just going to say before you leave, I've always taught and advocated that manhood begins at the point of responsibility. Now, one of the things that helps or empowers one to be the most responsible is experience, time, and age. So certainly the older you get, the greater opportunities you have to develop wisdom that is applied.
Well,
and responsibility.
Point of responsibility don't indicate manhood. You got kids that work on farms, got responsibilities, but they're not males. They may go out and gather the eggs, may go out and milk a cow. So that's the responsibility that they have.
That's not what I'm talking about. That's not the kind of responsibility I'm speaking of, though. I hear what you're saying, but I'm not speaking of responsibility in just those terms of doing something, being a busybody or physical labor. That's not what I mean by it, but I take your point there as well. Take your point as well. So, but okay. Listen, look, Sheldon, I'm 5 minutes over my time with you. Thank you, sir. And so we'll look forward to you making announcements in the coming weeks in terms of when you'll be airing and things of that nature. And we'll incorporate those into our promotions for Talk Straight on Tuesday night there. Final word from you, sir, before we cut out of here.
Well, I would just say I appreciate having me on, and I appreciate the opportunity to have more conversations so that we can, once again, just be able to enrich and enlighten and grow from each other, because it's important to have the conversations. If you're not having the conversations, something else is influencing you having a conversation about something else in another place. And oftentimes there's a lot of junk that's happening out here in the world, and there's a lot of foolishness that we are entertaining as people. So if you can chime in on these kind of conversations and take a break from the stuff that we're consistently consuming, I believe it's very important. And hopefully this can spark movement in ourselves, movement as a community, and things of that nature. So I'm looking forward to next Thursday, and the topic will be announced soon, but I'm looking forward to next Thursday. It was nice speaking to you again, St. Louis, and thank you, host Mr. Dockery, and I will be checking in with you guys.
Okay, all right. Well, thanks again, sir. We appreciate you. All right, well, you're listening to Talk Straight, and as we announce Tuesday, we're going to be cutting back on, I will be, let me say it like that, Talk Straight will still be going on Thursdays, but I will not be facilitating the discussions directly. We're grateful that Mr. Sheldon has agreed to take that on for a couple of reasons. I believe that his generation has a place to lead in that substantive dialogue. And my hope and my prayer is that from that, I heard a lot of young people that he had on the show with him just for those 2 days. And I was inspired by that. So hopefully they can generate a bit more for that generation, you know, that 30-ish generation and 30 and under, you know. And we want to provide that opportunity, so we're grateful for that. St. Louis, I guess you and me, we just going to have to keep on trying to keep our head to the sky. Huh?
Well, what's the rest of you? What is the rest of your posse?
I don't know. I'm not sure where they are. But I asked Mr. Sheldon specifically if he would join me tonight so we can kind of lay some things down. This show is recorded, and I'm sure he'll use some of this as promo for the coming shows there. So, but there we go, man. There we go. Anything else you have that you'd like to offer? Otherwise, we could wrap it up for the week. Well, there go Don. He coming, Johnny come lately. St. Louis, I'm sorry, I extend the floor. So anything else you have before? We can go to 8:30 tonight. Go ahead.
Don is here. Maybe he got something to talk about. He usually do.
Yeah, he does. He usually does. Don, how you doing, sir?
Doing good. I was going to tell St. Louis I was in a meeting with some folk today, and there was about three of us in there, and the rest of them didn't show up. The meeting was on the capitals of Alabama. There was at least five capitals of Alabama before it had some capitals before it just became a full state. And I come to find out today Tennessee had six capitals. So, Mr. Dockery, you got to go do some research.
Okay, all right.
I learned something new myself today. Huh?
Yeah. Well, we're lifelong learners, Don. We're lifelong learners. Always some life can provide many teachable moments, so that's a good thing. Mr. Shelton was on. He's going to be facilitating our dialogue on Talk State on Thursday night, Don. And he committed himself to be with us for an hour tonight, so he's gone now. But we have about another 20 minutes or so. The other night, Don, you put some things on the floor, and I'm not sure you had an opportunity to fully elucidate the thought that you were trying to or to explain your. Let me give you a minute within this next 19 minutes or so to explain that relative to you were talking about having international access to resources, to banking, and so forth and so on. And I was listening to what you were saying, but I'm not sure you had an opportunity to clearly explain what you were trying to say. You want to try to further explain that?
Well, it's strange you brought that up, Mr. Dockery. Me and Uncle Charles talked about that this morning. You know, at the end of my dad's life, Uncle Charles and my dad was bumping heads because of the way my dad was taught. And I don't blame him because he went to American Baptist Theological Seminary, and then I went to American Baptist College, and then I went to Selma University. And what I learned in the dynamics, the teachings now teach you about the full content of the Bible. And I don't think that when John Lewis and my dad was in school, they taught that type of course. You know, I ran into a term called the Septuagint. You know what I'm saying? I don't think my dad and John Lewis was taught anything about that.
Hmm. Okay.
So follow him the way he looked at the book a lot, because I looked at it different because I had been through the more science.
I see. Well,
and I was going to tell you what me and Uncle Charles were talking about this morning, Mr. Dockery. Uncle Charles's wife is from Liberia, and he told me that they still had the rubber plantations over there. And
wow.
That was very interesting because he went over and stayed with his wife in Liberia and stayed with the tribes in Liberia. And I was telling him that I noticed on Facebook that Charles Jr., you know, he had a community in Cleveland that was from Liberia, and they met. And the police interrupt their meeting. And what that's about, it goes back to Marcus Garvey and the rubber. The Goodyear and the Goodrich still have rubber plantations till this present date in Liberia. And if you see all these cars traveling up down the road, they got rubber on them, right?
Yeah.
That's our rubber.
Yeah,
now, how do we get that to them? Huh?
I said my car got rubber. All four tires got made of rubber.
That's right. And it's going to come from Liberia. And and I was going to tell you that that's the reason they deported Marcus Garvey, because he brought that issue out. That's the reason they got him up out of here. And still to this present day, we have a slave mentality, and we don't understand that when we was fighting the Civil War, Congress was fighting, you know, bringing in the greenback and everything. You know what I'm saying? And we wasn't in that dialogue.
Well,
and Lincoln passed the National Banking Act of 1863. I don't think we still understand it.
All right, well, let me bring you to this point. So if I wanted to right now, Don, if I wanted to right now, take up your idea and to go and establish myself with some sort of bank relationship internationally in the continent of Africa somewhere, okay, what's the first step? How do I go about doing it? Because what you were saying, what I heard you suggest is that collectively – you said we. I'm not sure who you meant exactly, but I think I understand you were talking about Negro, Black, and Colored folk being organized to the point that we have international banking opportunities and extensions beyond America. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think that's what you were trying. That's why I wanted to give you an opportunity.
That's right. That's what I'm discussing, Mr. Dockery. And I don't think we understand our lineage back to that land. I don't think that we really are craving for that because we've been so indoctrinated to be slaves. You know what I'm saying? You know, Jesse Jackson kept pushing jobs, and my dad, when he ran for Congress, he said that leads back to the master-slave relationship. And what he was saying, because he was the point man of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, what he was saying, he said, we need to learn and study. And at the time, I didn't quite understood it until I took the banking course. Now, once I undertook the banking course, I see clearly what he's talking about.
Okay. But, Don, let me see. You said we're not there. Well, can I offer this for your consideration? Talking about every person that somebody may consider to be Black, Negro, colored, African-American, you got to understand that as a single subgroup, that is not a monolithic group. Everybody don't identify with being Black don't identify with being African American. Don't identify with being Negro. You understand what I'm saying? So how you gonna get all those people collectively together to extend economic establishment internationally like that? So it seems like to me that's an individual thing. No?
No, you can't do it individually.
Or a smaller group, I should say. Perhaps a smaller group of organizing as opposed to trying to make everybody.
I was going to say to you, Mr. Dark, as we talking, Erica and Brother Scott Muhammad up in Tuskegee, they are beginning to establish seed chapters up north.
Is that right?
Right?
Wow.
So, you know what I'm saying? It's just like when SNCC was formed. And guess what happened today, Mr. Darker? Today I went into the meeting on the five capitals. The lady that's hooked up with George Soros did something on the 60s the same time they was talking about the five capitals. And I noticed that.
Okay.
So there is an element that's trying to keep us from going to that level.
So the rest of the audience can understand what we're talking about seed. Students for correct me if I'm wrong, Students for Economic and Educational Development. Is that correct, Don?
That's right. That's Students for Education and Economic Development, yeah. My father and Yesse Yehuda preceded that process after he ran for Congress. That was 86 and 87.
All right. Now, that's I want to make sure the audience understand. Now, this was a process that was being taught, and I observed how it had some, at least anecdotal success, in pockets. And I'm convinced that if it's utilized properly, it could be beneficial throughout urban America. But I've seen how it had, again, anecdotal success in pockets, in small places. And that's not to say everybody got to embrace it. Everybody got to want it. Everybody got to follow it. But I think it's a very powerful model. I had the opportunity to learn and to engage and interview Reverend Bevel, Don's dad, at length, and a lot of powerful things that came from his influence with Dr. King and Jose Williams and Ralph Abernathy and all those cats, you know. Don don't like them, but Jesse Jackson was in the circle. And some people would argue he shouldn't have been there. But he was, Don. He was. But that's a very powerful – those are some lessons that can – young folk today, Don, I think they can learn something from all that if we are wise about sharing it with them. But anyway.
My thing was, you know, when I joined the Morris Divine Nash, the movement, you know, I saw the same thing in that movement that I saw with the SELC movement. You know, just like Jesse stole the treasure for SELC. Kirkman Bay stole the treasure in the Morris Science.
Oh, man. You see, you're always slamming people, Don. You're always punching down on folks.
No, I'm just saying, Mr. Dockery, it stole off key, and we got to get it back. That's a fact. Jesse stole the treasury of SELC. Mm-hmm. You remember him and Ralph got to fighting about that. You know what I'm saying? And I didn't quite understand it at the time. My dad, and I'm going to say this, Mr. Dockery, you don't know this. My dad wrote a booklet on it. He said, which side are you on? And it was about Jesse. It addressed Jesse. And once I seen what he was coming from, and I had studied the Morris Science and Kirkman Bay, it helped me a lot, Mr. Dockery, to see how we need to be on one accord on an issue. And I'm going to say it again. You can call him and Andy Young and Bernard Lafayette, all of them out. Why haven't y'all talked about the National Banking Act of 1863?
Well, now, Don, so here's the thing. And St. Louis jumped in here. It seems to me that some people assume that those guys that did what they did then, that everybody got to go back and replicate everything they did, as opposed to living their life and, more importantly, learning from what they could from it, but doing what they must do in this present moment. They're never coming back, especially those that are deceased. They ain't going to never come back. But these young folk here today, earlier this year, I laid out a model. And there are just a handful of people who are still following those principal ideas, and they haven't been as consistent with it as they like or as I would love to see them. But you can bring out the best ideas unless people use them, Don. You understand what I'm saying? And it's not
I
about
listen to this, Mr. Doctor. Today, you don't know this. I went to Walmart today, and I ran into the first African-American fire chief here in town. What he did was change R.B. Hudson. It was called CHAT, but he brought R.B. Hudson's name back to the school, which was the high school at that time. Well, R.B. Hudson was a banker with Alabama Pennies and Savings. And Chief was talking about, if we don't educate our children to who our history is, then our children are lost. It ain't up to the Europeans to do that. It's up to us to do that.
I agree with you 1,000% there, sir. 1,000%. St. Louis, what do you think about that?
Let me ask you. So if they know their history, they perform better on their mouth test?
Yes, they will. It's a motivating factor.
Wow.
You see that, Ruben?
Yeah. I think that, St. Louis.
What kind of school would do that? Those African-centered schools that use African-centered curriculum?
Possibly, yeah. You know about one in St. Louis, right? You shared with me a model.
At the high school, they do the worst.
Well.
Because they're not motivated at the high school level on that.
They got the curriculum.
No, they do not. St. Louis. Listen at this. Dr. Tellis, who's at Selma University right now, I met him day before yesterday, and he was taken out of academic dean by President Cleveland because he did put a banking course in at Selma University. So what element that was controlling Cleveland? I know what element. The same element that's controlling Benjamin Turner Platt not being up at 718 Franklin.
So you say blacks need to have their own banks.
They need to be economically independent, just like all other nationalities in this country. And guess
what do you mean economically?
I want you to listen to me good. If one group is trying their best to help you, but some doggone reason you running from them. And you know who that is?
What?
LaRouche Organization.
So you say blacks need to have their own.
Well, Don,
I don't know nothing about this organization you're talking about. You're pulling stuff out of the air.
I know I'm not. It's right there.
I ain't never heard of nobody know LaRouche. But I asked a question.
Yeah,
you say that blacks need to.
LaRouche got on the floor right now, the Manhattan Project.
Hey, Josh. We got 7 minutes before the show is over with, and you still got Brother Don G. Bevelel out of Selma, Alabama. What you want to do? It cut you off, but you caught us at it. We're cutting it. Oh, by the way, one second, Josh. Thursday night. We Talk Straight will be going to Tuesday nights for 2 hours, and on Thursday night, look like every other Thursday, we'll have a co-host that'll be facilitating those discussions. He's a young man. I think you might find him interesting, Mr. Ben Shelton. And so if you call in on Thursday, you won't get me directly. You'll get him, okay? That's one of our program changes. We announced that Tuesday, and I just thought I'd mention that to you. All right.
Okay.
Got 6 minutes, sir. Tell Don what you want him to know so we can wrap it up for the night. Go ahead, tell him what you want him to know. Don, what you want Josh to know?
I want Josh and generation to know that, you know, first thing people, you always hear on the Malcolm X assassination, and I never did look at it until somebody told me that Wall Street was tied into the Lords of London. Told me that. I know why Malcolm got popped. Lords of London control Wall Street? You mean way over in Great Britain, London control Wall Street? And listen to this, Mr. Docker. Ain't this strange? Why come we don't, I'm like LaRouche and him, why we don't have an economic system like he was talking about the Manhattan Project that tie ourselves to the continent of Africa? Why is Wall Street tied to Queen Elizabeth?
Some of those things, because they are organized. That's why. They organize themselves to do that.
And we're not organized because we still want to be mental and spiritual slaves. We was once physically slaves. But now we're in mental and spiritual slavery. Well, that's what I see.
The question is, who is that we that you're talking about? Because everybody ain't in that. But, okay, let me do this. Let me do this. Josh, give me something I can take home, put in my pocket, so I won't just have bubble gum in my pocket. Give me something, Josh, I can take home tonight. I got 4 minutes.
Yolk is good. And I just got on it. But all of these were 1,000 years ago. What about now? What are we doing right now to clean up our dirty, nasty mess? What about now? What about the now and the importance of now? That was then.
Yeah.
That's a good question.
I love what you're saying, Miguel. I tell you what, Josh, I'm gonna do my best to some way address the now next Tuesday. How that sound? Next Tuesday.
Good.
I'm gonna do my best to now. You raise a good point. You raise a good point, Don, and that's what the young kids are looking for, man. They looking for you to tell me how to make this work for me today. Because I'm hungry today. Not yesterday. Or tomorrow, I'm hungry today. I need to eat today.
Mr. Doc, let's let him dream a little bit. You remember in the beginning when God said, "Let us make man."
Yes,
he's talking to you, Joshua.
Yes,
he's talking to you right now. Let us make man. He keep talking to you every day, Joshua. He's talking to you every time you go to sleep. He said, "Let us make man." God is talking to you, and the man he's talking about is to you and to your brothers collectively. How y'all collectively gonna economically take care of yourself? Let us make man. Mm. He's talking to you. Let us make a nation. Let us make a nation. God is talking to you right now. How you going to do that? How you going to bring that vision into being? He's constantly talking to you through the Spirit. But you got to be quiet and hear him when he's talking to you. And he's giving you visions. You got to be quiet and prayerful because he's talking to you.
All right. Listen, Juicy. Josh.
Okay, then. He's talking to me. Say he is talking to me. Then what am I supposed to do with this talk that he's doing? What am I supposed to do with it?
Interesting. All right, Josh, we can't answer that for you tonight. We've got about a minute and 40 seconds, okay? So that won't be able to be answered tonight. I'm sorry, but join me Tuesday, Josh, if you can. You and Don come back Tuesday. Let's pick that back up Tuesday. You and Don. That's a good conversation right there, Don. Now, that's some good stuff right there, bro. You done stirred some up right there, Don. No, but that's good. That's what we need to be done. We need to be engaging young bro. He raised a decent question, and it deserved an answer. But I'll be back next Tuesday, 7 o'clock p.m., for another episode of Talk Straight. We appreciate all y'all. Love you. Like peanut butter, love jelly. And we look forward to seeing y'all next Tuesday night, 7 o'clock p.m. for another episode of Talk Straight. We'll see you then.
Well, son, I tell you, life for me ain't been no crystal stair. It's had tacks in it, and splinters, and boards torn up, and places with no carpet on the floor, bare. But all the time, I's been a-climbing on, and reaching ladders, and turning corners, sometimes going in the dark, where there ain't been no light. So boy, don't you turn back. Don't you set on the steps. 'Cause you find it's kinda hard. Don't you fall now. For I still going, honey. I still climbing. And life for me ain't been no crystal stair.